So, I'm Jerry McCaff. I'm a member of the Greta Base OS team. I work on the installer. I'll be giving a presentation on that later in the day. And I've also started working on Xen, which is a virtualization technology, and working on integrating that into our core. So, let's take a look at what Xen is, where we are now, where we want to go, and a lot of things like that. And then we'll end it with a demo. So, what is Xen? Xen's gotten a lot of press, so that's actually a much easier question recently than it would have been, say, a month ago. But Xen is basically a fairly simple virtualization framework. Not that simple makes it easy, but it's actually implemented fairly cleanly. Basically, there's a hypervisor layer that is actually what you boot from your bootloader, and then you start the Linux kernel from that. The thing that differentiates Xen from a lot of other virtualization technologies is that they do something called pure virtualization. I'll get into exactly what that is in a minute. But Xen basically, some people use it to refer to just the sort of hypervisor. Some people also use it to refer to the setup tools for managing all of your guest domains. It started as a research project at one of the universities in Cambridge, the other Cambridge. It's PPL. So, paravirtualization. Some of the virtualization technologies that people are familiar with, the one that comes to mind always, VMware. VMware requires no changes to the guest OS. You just run it, it works. Paravirtualization makes things simpler, but it then requires changes to the guest OS. It's mostly replacing low-level architecture-specific calls into the hypervisor. So basically, instead of actually asking for memory by doing all of the fun segmentation stuff yourself, you tell the hypervisor, hey, I want a chunk of memory. It makes some things actually a lot simpler in the guest OS, but it does require changes. And then also, instead of having access to the real hardware, you have virtual device drivers that then talk to a privileged domain with access to all of the real hardware. The big advantage here is performance. The Xen people, if you watch one of their presentations, they have all the slides with all of the performance benchmarks where they're doing TTTP or LMBench and spec, and they're getting 95% of the data Linux performance and Linux under them. That's pretty good. That's not sort of the tend to argue. So what sort of OS have been ported? Obviously, Linux has. There's a port for both 2.4 and 2.6. For Fedora, the 2.4 port, not all that interesting really at this point. But 2.6 is definitely there. Some of the stuff hasn't quite been ported forward to 2.6, but that's underway. NetBSD, FreeBSD, some crazy guy ported Plan 9 to it. And I wish I were kidding. So there's Plan 9. Actually, one of the early revisions of Xen, so Xen's actually been around for about 3 years now as a PhD research project. Really good. One of the initial revisions, Microsoft actually funded a port of Windows 2000 to Xen. So it's not impossible to do, but that never actually got released because it was done with Microsoft's Microsoft license and all sorts of fun things like that. But it is possible. And so there's some interesting stuff I'll get to that makes some of this a little easier. So paravirtualization, the big gain you get is higher performance, the losses, you have to port your OS. And it's a toss-up. So one of the big concepts as soon as you start looking at Xen is the concept of a domain, which is what they use to refer to all of your guest OSs, basically, other than the Xen hypervisor. So the first of these, the most important one, is the privileged domain, or domain zero, as they like to call it. And it's called that because all of the domains get a numeric ID, and the first one gets ID zero, so it's domain zero. Makes a lot of sense. This is the domain that typically has direct access to the hardware. You actually can do passing through access to hardware to other domains. The privileged domain gets started from the Zen hypervisor, or by the Zen hypervisor. And this is done taking advantage of yet another fun thing called multi-boot, which was a standard developed by the third D. Yeah, so they've gone all out trying to find what sort of weird things they could actually use. But multi-boot is actually really useful in this case because you really are booting two kernels. And that's exactly what multi-boot was made for, to be able to have, you know, a kernel and then you have modules that you want to load after. So you load the Zen hypervisor as your first kernel. That comes up and then, you know, all the other two modules you end up having are your Linux kernel, your Xen Linux, and your initrd. And so those are then in a known location to the Zen hypervisor. It can move them to the appropriate virtual locations and then start up the Linux boot process. Watching Zen boot is interesting. Might actually be a thing. My laptop right now is running Zen. It's not something I'd normally do on a laptop right now because a lot of the sort of early device initialization and low-level stuff is handled from the Zen hypervisor, which means you don't get things like APM or ACPI, which are kind of useful with a laptop. But I've got it running on a couple of machines at the office and a machine at home that I usually do most of my testing. So once you've booted one domain, that's all well and good, but really one running one Linux instance on the machine, if you're going to do that, why aren't you just, you know, running Linux on the machine? Doesn't gain you a lot. So that's where the unprivileged domains come into play, or the Zen U's as they like to call them. And these are really cool because you can instantiate them on the fly. They're actually really fast to boot. And basically, you know, you have all of your virtual devices and the virtual front ends talk to drivers running in domain zero. And actually, one of the things that's underway right now is actually making it so that you can start a domain other than domain zero, which has direct access to hardware, and then run all of your drivers in that. So instead of having your SCSI driver take down your entire machine when it fails, maybe you can just take down your driver domain, which could be useful in some cases. Depends on exactly what your application is. The cool thing about the unprivileged domains is that you can pause them, which is just like suspending them, but you know, they're basically paused to disk, you can reboot, you can come back 3 days later and resume it. And from that, the obvious extension is then you snapshot them so that you can go back to a previous point. You can also do domain migration. So if you have multiple machines, say I have a cluster of, you know, a rack of machines, and all of them are running Zen, and, you know, two of them are running web servers, two of them are running database servers, I've got a mail server here, and I've got just a spare machine. Because, you know, one of my machines is going to die one of these days. I don't know what day it is. I don't know which machine it is. So if I'm using some sort of common storage backend, then it's entirely possible that if my web server dies, instead of failing over at the application layer, you could fail over at the entire OS level. And you could migrate from, you know, the machine that just that's dying to a new one, which is kind of cool. That's a little bit broken and is an unstable configuration, but it will be fixed though. So, like I was saying, there are other virtualization technologies. VMware is the one that everybody's probably familiar with because they've been around for a long time. They have a really nice product. I'm going to be the first. I use VMware for testing the installer stuff when I'm sitting at home. It presents something that looks exactly like a real machine. It's really useful. User mode Linux was started a few years ago now. Had a lot of people behind it for a while, but it's sort of falling off with Zen now. Basically, user mode Linux is Linux only, kind of downside, and you basically are running the kernel as you do. QEMU does complete emulation. It's still useful, and a lot of people are using it to run x86 binaries on the PC so that they can get Flash or whatever they want. If you went to the Fedora and Altered architecture, I bet that's a probable version of QEMU or Kolin. And Box also does sort of full system emulation, and they're basically, you know, they were trying to do VMware in an open source fashion. And they never really took off. A lot of that low-level stuff is really, really hard and not really fun to write. But there's a lot of actual useful code there for some things, that, such that some of the Box tree is actually mounted and imported into Xen to do some device emulation. Because with some of the upcoming processor technologies, that gets kind of interesting. Let's see. So from a standpoint of Fedora, what have we done? So if you're running the Fedora develop tree, you may have noticed the introduction of these Xen packages. If you're not running the Fedora develop tree, which, you know, most people probably aren't as crazy about, there are Xen packages there. We basically have the initial tools all packaged up. They're written in Python. They depend on Python Twisted. So out of that, Python Twisted is going to go away. There's packaging of the Xen 0 and the Xen U kernel. Right now, those two kernels are separate. They will be able to merge. The big problem is that you don't want to have modular everything in Xen U with the way that bootloading works right now, just because it makes things entirely too painful. I hope before Fedora 4.4 goes out that it gets down to one Xen kernel package. And basically, there's the code there so that when you install the Xen 0 kernel, the configuration in your Pro config doesn't look anything like what you're used to. But so all of the changes that may be grubby so that it actually does things right when you're on the Xen style kernel. So what are we working on? Right now, there are basically two people within Red Hat working significant portions of our time on integrating Xen. The big sorts of things that we've been working on are guest SMP support. Because, let's face it, with machines that you buy these days, they're either hyper-threaded or there are multiple processors on it, and then there's also all this multi-core stuff that people keep talking about. So SMP is very important. As it stands right now, you can run Xen on an SMP host, but each guest that you run can only take advantage of once, can only be one CPU. With some of the changes that have been done recently, there's actually support for doing up to 32 CPU guests on your single processor machine. Not necessarily the smartest idea in the world in that case, but it's useful for testing in a lot of ways to be able to do the entire gambit. And you know that's going to be slow. More usable, you know, if I have a four processor machine, to park it up into one CPU for my domain zero, two CPUs for the database server running on it, and one CPU for the web server. Architecture. Right now, Xen is x86 32. There's work underway being sponsored by Intel and AMD to port to the x86 64 architecture. HP has contributed a port to Itanium. That went in the tree earlier this week from what I hear. Because, you know, if you have a Superdome, which is a 64-way Itanium bus, you probably don't need all 64 processors for one task. Let's see, what else is there for? The actual low-level tools are in the process of being completely rewritten. This is the third generation of tools, so the next one will be the fourth generation. And they think they know what they're doing. That was the exact one. So I had a meeting earlier this week with some of the upstreams and developers who have actually recently started a company called Xensource. And I met with Jim Pratt, who's the maintainer, and he said, you know, we're on our fourth generation of tools. We think we know what we're doing this time. And it seems like they're going the right direction. Basically, they're modularizing things out. There's going to be some simple daemons that you have to run, and then a lot of the tool layer on top of that is going to be written in Python that'll make it easier to extend. And then as things end up looking critical for speed, and also some of the weird people that like running Plan 9 don't want to run Python, so they're probably going to force some of this stuff to see. At the end of the day, is there going to be one set of tools? Probably not, but hopefully at the low level, everything's going to be using the same API, which will then let a lot of people work on all sorts of different pool management tools to meet, to match whatever your specific needs are. What I've been working on is sort of a device model for Zen, because as it stands right now, the devices show up, and if you look at your normal x86 box, all of your devices are attached to the PCI bus, and so there's a nice tree of how things look. It's not really the case with Zen right now, so I'm basically adding a very flat structure to Zen to expose the devices via the kernel, because that'll then let me do probing of them, and then I can start installing to them, which is really my goal. Booting Zen unprivileged guest is a little weird, so there's various people working on doing things like a bootloader, so that when you start up a domain, it actually reads the kernel for the domain from the domain's file system instead of reading it from your kernel host. And there's a lot more. The Zen community is growing rapidly. The amount of traffic on that list is phenomenal. Not just the Gordon Bell a lot of days. And so it's exciting. There's a lot of people interested in it. Virtualization is a big deal to a lot of companies right now. So Fedora is a good place to start playing with it. I don't know what at the end of the day everything's going to look like. I'm very open to suggestions, because I have my ideas, but they're not necessarily the right ideas. So for Fedora Core 4, what do we want to have done? The first goal is actually have the package. But we've done that already. We're through step one, which is really good considering Fedora Core 4 test one is supposed to come out. So with test one, the packages will be there, and one of the references at the end is a quick start guide that I wrote to getting started with Zen, setting things up. And so with Fedora Core 4 test one and that guide, you should be able to start playing around and seeing how Zen works. One of the big things that I'd like to have for Fedora Core 4 is the installation of your guest VMs. This is so that you can actually use Anaconda just like you do normally and install as many guests as you want. Another thing that'll be kind of cool for guest VMs is stateless stuff, which I haven't talked about here before. And also, I'm thinking about possibly adding another install class to the choices of desktop, workstation, server, and custom. Adding basically some sort of virtual server install class so that at install time you can say, I'm installing this to be a virtual server, and go ahead and set everything up so that when you reboot, you're all set with the right tools you need so that you can actually actively create VMs. So some references, there's the Zen website and all the slides will be online. There's a Fedora virtualization project page, and you can spell it with a Z or an S, because the people from Europe disagree with me being from the U.S., and they think it should be spelled with an S, I think it should be spelled with a Z. So we made them both work. There's the Fedora virtualization start, and that's linked from the project page, and that just, we're basically getting good. And Fedora develop list for questions, comments, whatever. And so from there, it's time to demo this and see if it works or not. It worked last night, 1:30 in the morning, eventually. So unfortunately, all of those Zen control tools have to run as root, but so it goes. And you notice from my battery monitor that it can't figure out anything about the battery because APM and ACPI don't work. So to start with, I have a very simple, the Zen people actually provide a TPY Linux boot image that's sort of modified to work nicely with Zen. And so basically to do that, you just sort of have a simple config file. That's sort of what it's like.
So this is Zen 0.
So right now my machine is running as Zen 0, Zen and Linux, as the Zen people like to say. And so the main tool we use creating, destroying, listing, everything is called XM. For Zen Monitor, I'll start ZenD. So I'll start ZenD. Blah, blah, blah. So if I list now, you can see domain 0 is running, has ID 0. I gave it 512 megs of RAM, and some of the other stuff isn't as applicable with Zen 0. Oh, and my mouse is cool. I don't need it really. So, the tools are a little bit broke. They're not very well done. So now I'm just going to create a domain and go ahead and make this terminal my console for UI Linux. So you watch, it's using the config file, and hey, it starts to boot. You see, it's pretty much a very normal looking kernel boot. The big difference is Zen is providing the memory mapping and the processor. There are a couple of things that Zen interacts in. And hey, it looks like a pretty normal system. It carries through what your processor is. If I didn't know better, I think I was just running on a machine with 32 megs of RAM that is a Pentium M 1.6 gigahertz. That'd be a little weird, but you know, hey. So it's a simple little Zen image. It's really a great way to, if you're just starting to play with Zen, it's really helpful to download that image just so that you make sure everything's working before you start setting things up and going out on a limb. Because it took me a couple tries to get it right. So, now I want to create a Zen image of basically the Rawhide tree I have on my laptop. This tree is from, I don't know, a week or so ago, because I've been in Linux for a long week. But I want to go ahead and do it in a simple install and then be able to play the Rawhide. And the hope eventually is that, you know, we'll be able to do this via Anaconda, which will be really cool, because if you want to play with the develop tree, you won't have to reinstall your machine. You can just install a virtual machine right. And that'll let you play with something. That's the really nice thing for the development side. Also, it could be useful at some point for doing things like isolated build servers, which Christian cares a lot about. So that, you know, you don't have to worry about the fact that you're building glibc and gcc on the same machine, and you don't want a Trojan glibc to cause your gcc build to, you know, be Trojaned also, and then, you know, or phone home and open a connection so that somebody can tunnel back through and hijack your domain. It's just not all that good to have that happen. So I'm going to just create my new image. Store that image. And I'm going to create a 1 gigabyte sparse file to use as my file system, because I'm just going to do sort of a base install of the actual core, the smallest set mentioned in comms. That's what I want. So I basically wrote 1 meg, see, a gig out. So it's a little bit more than a gig. But that'll be good. That's more than I need. So now I need to make a file system on it instead of just having a gig. So make it. And hey, I have an EXT3 file system, or EXT2 file system. Now, I'm going to use Yum to do this for now. Like I said, the hope is with the release of FC4, you won't have to use it. You'll be able to. This is going to keep working. It's not as nice as being able to step through the installer, say what packages you want, and make sure all the config files get right now, right? Because this way I'm going to actually have to handcraft a couple of config files. But let's mount my Now that you look back, and you know, empty file system, nothing there, no tricks here, and there's nothing behind the curtain. So I just want to do a simple group install of core. Makes of packages. They've changed up like 300 some. There's weird, silly stuff in there right now that probably needs to go away. But, so be it. Sounds good. Let's install it. And, voila, away it goes. As you can tell, I'm using last week's rawhide with the version of RPM that calls it double and triple counting of packages.
So we're gonna have like different types of packages for kind of like send you instance. Because it seems like something don't make sense when it's an instance.
So there are a few things that don't make sense, but the majority of things do. That's the thing, is there's the number of things is small enough that it's not worth special case anymore.
Yeah.
So one of the downsides of the way that you boot Xen right now is that you don't have an NRD, which really confuses a couple of things. So I actually have to do all kinds of stuff I think to avoid that. And I'm hoping I can remember all of them from memory. Yeah.
Then I'll be fixed.
Yeah. This is all. Yeah. It's very early. The eventual plan is you'll load the kernel from inside the guest OS, and therefore it'll be easy to make an NRD for it, and everything will just work. You'll get normal UDEV functioning from the NRD loaded when you start doing main. But until then, I actually have to have a couple of devices in the kernel to boot. But unfortunately, we can't package those devices because we didn't get confused when that package got upgraded, and UDEV was running. UDEV would be mounted over your UDEV. It was kind of ugly. But, so, because really I just don't remember. I need a console. You end up basically having to scan everything and figure out where the lower magnitude was. So there's actually work underway to change that. But right now, it's all being emulated. It slows things down a little bit, but. In Julep C, there is an attempt to convince Ulrich to take a patch that improves this. We'll see what happens for Fedora 44. I'm not counting on anything in particular. It may just be slower. And that's not the end of the world. There is the simple workaround of move libTLS out of the way and we don't have to do it anymore. But so unmount my file system. Now I need to create a big file.
You don't need it now because you have all the files of one.
You do, so you have to have the big file to tell it basically where the kernel is, where the file system is, and things like that. You can pass it all in the command line, but I never remember all of the objects, so I always just take the configs I already have and I edit them. So kernel is pretty simple, self-explanatory. You say how much memory you want to get it. Since my laptop has a total of 640 megs of RAM, Xen takes 32 megs for the hypervisor, so then I've got 512 for actually running Linux here. And I think that I'll only give my virtual machine 32 megs. It won't be all that interesting, but it's worth it. Let's do two network interfaces. I'm saying, you know, use this file as the backing and present it as a partition. This is another one of those little areas where Xen is really kind of weird right now. Instead of presenting as a file as a disk, it presents it as a partition. That's something that I'm going to start campaigning against on the Xen list in the next couple of weeks. Because it really makes more sense to be able to have a full disk that you can then partition. And then it looks just like a real machine. But be that as it may, for now it works. So let's create Fedora. And let's see what happens. Oh, I did do console. So if I bring up the console, hey, it's going. Anyway.
Where are we writing rules? Like, it seems to me that all the work you can use is kind of climbing out for shell script. It's just like,
oh, yes.
Go.
Well, so the thing,
through, right?
So
like, you could just have a standard notation, you could like costumes and stuff like that.
So my goal is not a shell script. I want basically the little, you know, basically the little G2K app that says, where do I want my file, what do I want to use my backing for? And where do I, yeah, G2K. It'll be simple. And then say, you know, where do I want my image? And let's kick off and install pointing at this tree.
It's like system config virtualization.
Something like that, yeah. For Fedora 44, will we have all of that? Maybe not, but then again, that part will take me, you know, an hour to write.
The value doesn't seem to be so much in GUI as in knowing, as in not having to remember, you know, what specific devices to make.
Yeah, like that. Well, and the thing is, the devices, the goal is that you don't have to make the devices in the end. Because we'll be able to make real and NRDs in there. And then you boot the kernel in an NRD, and then you don't have to make the devices. Because then UDEV runs early enough that it's not a problem.
Not before the devices, I think that they felt requires hacking or holding the proper things in the package.
Yeah, the problem is then if you do it everything in it's a bad idea.
How come it boots so fast?
Because there's no actual hardware. Because it's not initializing any real hardware, and the majority of the slow point of booting is real hardware. Hardware is slow. Hardware probing takes forever. I also don't really have, you know, anything to speak of installed here. So there's not a lot of
very fast.
But I mean, if you actually look at timing boot, the amount of it that is waiting for hardware is a huge amount, especially things like, you know, because you probe it for hardware so that all the devices and modules can get loaded, is just time consuming because you have to wait for hardware to respond to that. Probing for a serial mouse takes, what, 2 seconds, Bill?
3 or 4 seconds.
Okay, so we turn that 3 or 4 seconds per port for that, you know, it's just, you know, keep adding things like that.
Yeah.
and all of a sudden you figure out what it's slow. But so this is my raw hype guess from, you know, last week's raw hype. Again, looks very similar. You know, this is the kernel that was built through the build system.
I guess you can use NFS mode to share.
You could use NFS to share things. Stateless in conjunction with virtualization has the possibility of being really interesting and cool. Because you just sort of keep your images and you just instantiate them.
Now, I understand we have three kernels, a regular one, a Zen 0, and a Zen U.
Right.
We've been talking about mixing the Zen 0
and Zen U collapsing the one. And I brought up we really need to be able to collapse the other two.
Yes.
When I was meeting with the Zen Source guys. The thing is, it really makes a lot of the i3. So the big difference between the standard x86 kernel and the Zen kernels is a lot of the early arch initialization and page table setup and things like that. And adding ifdefs through there just makes it even worse to read.
Well, you're not talking if you were to make it the same, you shouldn't be there because the river is.
Right. But even then, it sort of, it's still the same spaghetti problem, or if you know, you do function pointers, it's still kind of ugly. My guess is long term it's going to happen. It's just convincing people that it's the right thing to do. If you look at sort of how things evolved in Linux kernel, originally, Athlon was a separate kernel from i686, but now basically all of the advantages of the Athlon kernel are in the i686 kernel done at runtime. There's also an aspect of machines getting fast enough with the fact that you're using a function pointer to do the indirection doesn't slow things down. And so it's, but.
There's, I know, we're not talking much about initialization stuff.
Right. Well, the problem is that it's not just initialization. It's that all of your page table accesses have to go through this level of indirection or dealing with a branch. And that's where processors get. So, I think that's most of my demo.
How do you communicate with the outside world? So that if you're running Apache in the virtual system,
Yeah. What
is it?
So the way that works is that right now, when you start ZenD, instead of having all of your networking traffic go over your regular Ethernet interface, we basically switched it so that now everything is bridged. So it brings up a bridge interface using the standard Linux kernel stuff for creating bridges. And now you're bridged in. And if I actually had a network set up right now, I'd be able to request an IP and get an IP address with either of my interfaces in my guest line.
So is AAON the manufacturer of Zen?
Well, actually, I don't think that's actually the set that we're supposed to be using.
Yeah.
There's actually a set that is specifically designated for virtual Macs. I know this from the Linux iSeries. The other option is instead of doing bridging, doing routing. PostScript now exists. We're doing bridging by default now. We might switch to routing. Kind of depends, you know, both have their uses.
Graphics
in there. Good question. So that's one of the big differences is that so VMware does graphics because they basically, you know, emulate having a video card and then everything goes to that. With Zen, the way that you're going to end up doing graphics, at least for the foreseeable future, is exporting, XNet, PNC, things like that. In theory, you could basically hide your graphics card from your domain 0 and give it to one of your own privileged domains, but in practice, that doesn't actually work. So the problem is that even then, you only have one frame buffer, you only have one area of memory. So you don't actually. If you had multiple video cards, then you could do it. You know, you could give access to your second video card to.
No, but you could virtualize the frame buffer.
Right. So that's doable. it just hasn't been. Most of the interest we've been thus far has been for server-related tasks.
Exporting is faster.
Exporting is faster anyway. As long as you use SSH-X-Y. Now you bring
it. It just doesn't work.
That's great. Yeah, trusted X stuff.
For the explorer, I think it'd be better to have a question on server class organization class.
Well, so the way the installed classes are, they're all loosely used. They really just change what packages get installed. That's the only difference between them. So actually having those start to mean a little something more than that actually has other interesting concepts. Because then people get confused, they can't get the same results from custom. But custom is kind of a weird concept anyway, because you can customize anything just default to anything.
Is the Zen optimizer, is that part of the Zen time, or is it something
separate? So it's actually something, it's a separate piece. They're code from the Linux kernel that's been put in there. Basically, a separate kernel that includes. It's sort of a bare minimum, but it actually does a fair bit of stuff. It does all of the, you know, muxing back and forth to handle the page table virtualization and things like that. Another question. Tomatoes. French fries. Lunch.
Has there been any work with any of the other OS vendors to, other than Microsoft that you mentioned earlier, like IBM's i5 or
so,
AIX to run on top of this technology?
So AIX, it runs on PPC only. IBM is very involved in Zen. If you look at the Zendevil mailing list, you'll see lots of mail from people at us.ibm.com. Novell/SUSE is very involved. They're looking at it. HP, obviously, has done the Itanium course. They're obviously looking at things some. And actually, one of the HP Labs guys wrote a good chunk of the current generation of tools. IntelliAV.
So,
probably Zen stuff.
The Zen stuff is not, nobody's announced anything or worked. Demonstrated a working version of AIX on PowerPC or
anything? No. I have seen no PPC code for them. I wouldn't be surprised if it existed, but I haven't seen anything.
Or IBM already pushes the hardware virtualization.
Well, so the interesting thing is that what would be a nice end goal would be able to get to the point where you have the hypervisor, done in hardware, but then you have a sort of standard level, standard set of APIs sitting on top of it, so that you can use all the same tools. So that if I'm running, that then lets the tools be standardized, and that actually helps everybody.
I guess what they're doing right now is essentially they've got mini AIX that acts as the equivalent of the other way.
Interestingly, on Power 5, it's not just AIX, in a lot of cases it's Linux. That you're using major service market service OS. I've messed a lot with Power 5 too, since I've gotten installer work on all of that too. So I've actually used all of IBM stuff. So it's definitely interesting looking at how the Zen people are doing different. And trying to introduce some, you know, concept that some of the hardware vendors have been doing this for 30 years.
So
the Zen hypervisor runs in RAID 0. And the kernel runs in, I don't have a network up here. It's on the web.
It's probably one, right?
Yeah, it's not even one.
Right,
but yeah, it's definitely not from zero. One or three, I just don't want to do much. It's a little too very much, right? because I started them last night.
Yeah.
On-demand presentations. I migrate from Google.
Any other questions?
So, yeah, play with things as they get to the report test releases. Provide feedback. Like I said, we're not really set on what the best model to follow here is. I'm pretty sure that any model we follow is going to require a lot of the basic work that's going on right now. I really think the Fedora 4.4 is basically going to be technology, some basic stuff around it, and we'll go from there.
And the Zen machine is always running at the same speed as the real.
Well, so the processor says it's the same speed, but
yeah.
Is it running, you're getting, this is very similar to if you look at the hardware virtualization stuff.
Yeah.
That's why they don't actually show you a megahertz rating.
Yeah.
It's because you're just getting time slices.
No, I'm just visualizing a kind of master control sensor where you say, what speed will this memory have? So you've got the sliders.
Right, so actually you don't want to do that by processor memory. You really want to do that by scheduler on the processor. And the thing that confuses that is I/O domain. Because if you have a CPU bound process running and an I/O bound process running, an I/O bound domain running, and your I/O bound domain is waiting, then you want your CPU bound one to keep going even if it really shouldn't get more scheduled. And so that's where a lot of the scheduler stuff gets interesting. Especially when you start thinking about S&P and having a dual processor box running your domain zero, so that's one processor, and a two CPU guest, and maybe another one CPU guest, and just trying to schedule that is kind of a nightmare.
What about memory?
So as it stands right now, there's something called the balloon driver that actually allows for Zen to dynamically adjust the amount of memory available to the guest.
Have an out of memory killer that triggers out which guest to kill.
Which guest to kill? I suggest you set overcommit for that. So that works pretty well, but the big problem is you have to tell domain zero how much memory you should have at the start. And that's a little bit tricky. So one of the to-do list items that's not incredibly difficult, but that would be really useful, is getting to the point where domain zero basically takes all available memory on the machine and then gives up memory to guess that
need.
And then being able to, once you can do it for domain zero, you can already do it. That would be a lot more flexible.
Yeah.
And one way to think about it.
Graphical, nice graphical things on top of it.
Yeah. One thing that makes it, that needs thinking about there is how does this compare or use or anything like that, standard Linux hot plug memory facilities.
Exactly.
And this is an area where the Zen Source guys and I disagree. They're like, it's so much easier to do this in a virtual environment. We'll just use our own mechanism and not follow some of the standard hot plug stuff. Whereas I'm like, if you're going to add a CPU, you need to make sure that the hot plug CPU stuff is being used. And if the hot plug CPU stuff doesn't work well enough yet, then that should be worked on instead of making a one-off thing for them.
Because also, we took the version on Chrome. There's a good test environment for
right,
that.
Because that gives a great test environment. It makes it really simple to test this stuff. And then it helps as the hardware comes along as it develops.
Because right now, the only people I see are the AVL folks with the big boxes up in, I don't know.
In Oregon, and Austin, and Rochester, Minnesota.
They don't necessarily discuss it. Nobody can, yeah.
And Jack is cutting me off now and saying it's time to go get lunch.